BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the programme and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Anne Scott James, Dillis Powell, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norton. Round one tries to test their vocabulary, respectively. 2 marks if they get the meanings of these words approximately right. Beginning with Anne Scott James. Anne, what is a crampon? C-R-A-M-P-O-N.
Something to do with mountain climbing, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, you're jolly good.
Now, is it the thing that the sort of crutchy leg bit? What would you think? Or the thing you sort of heave yourself.
I would never climb a mountain with a crutchy leg.
I wouldn't even walk. Is it the thing you attach to your mountain boots?
Yes,
or is it
come
the
on,
thing that's
come
right,
on
the
there,
thing you attach to your mountain
why?
Boots? Well, so as to get a better grip on the icy side of the mountain.
That's well done, Anne. That's a beautiful definition. It's a frame of spikes fitted to a boot for walking on ice or steep snow with 8, 10, or 12 points. It can also mean, before it was adopted by the mountaineers, a metal hook or a grappling iron, but yours is the up-to-date explanation. 2 marks. And Frank Muir, the meaning of the word lancinating. L-A-N-C-I-N-A-T-I-N-G. Lancinating.
Yes. The verb.
Yeah.
Lancinating. Anything to do with lancing, as in medical matters?
Yes.
Deboiling.
No.
No boil, only toil. One lancinates one's lobe.
Yes?
If one wishes an earring to depend therefrom.
I think you creep home with 2 there, just about. It's pain, which is piercing and stabbing, acute and shooting, from a Latin word which means to rend, so that when Frank next wears his pierced earrings, that's roughly it. All right, 2.
Not with my tweeds.
All right, Dennis Powell. The meaning of the word lambent. L-A-M-B-E-N-T. Lambent.
Well, it's kind of flickering of a flame.
Yes. It has a particular quality.
It's a poetic kind of thing, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. Lambent flame. Sort of intermittent flame.
No. 1 out of 2. It is a flame or a light. It comes from a Latin word meaning to lick with flame. But the point is it plays on the surface of whatever it is playing on without burning it. It's a sort of soft kind of radiance. It doesn't burn it all up, all in one. Mm. And poetically, a lambent eye or the lambent sky means it's softly radiant without hurting. Dennis Norton. Dennis, what is a Hamlet? Not just Hamlet, a Hamlet.
Is it a?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Sounds like an ejaculation. Hamlet is... Well, there's all sorts of things. Hamlet is little melancholy Dane. You know, it's little village.
Yeah.
Or in America they have a... It's a ham omelette. It's called Hamlet, only the... is done with an American accent.
I'll give you 2 before you go on any further.
I want to creep home with 2.
You're not creep home. You come triumphantly with 2. It's a small village, especially one without a church, too small for a church, and comes from an old English word meaning home. Well, before we begin round 2, I give each team a quotation for them to write down, and I want the 2 women members of the team to study their quotations. And then at the end, I shall ask the 2 teams, women members, for the source of the quotations. And Anne Scott James and Dennis Norton, here's your quotation. All power is a trust, and we are accountable for its exercise. And then Dennis Power with Frank Muir. Yours is, I am myself indifferent, honest. And then at the end of the program, I shall ask Dennis and Frank to give me their ideas of how these words came to be said or to be written. And so on to round 2. And this is a round of pet names. From what names are the following pet names derived? Anne Scott James, to begin. Amy.
Emily?
Nope.
Oh, come off it. Or Emma.
Emma. It's Emma. Nope. It's a fine old name.
Jemima.
No, it won't do.
Amy?
I don't see that there
Amelia.
Is any...
Amelia.
Yes, two marks for Amelia. Amy short for Amelia. Frank Muir. Mercy.
It's French. Thank you. Short. The surname is Beaucoup. Short for Mercedes.
All right. Mercy is normally short for Mercedes, but it is in fact a name on its own by itself, thanks to sort of puritanical tradition of naming girls according to the cardinal Christian virtues. Mm. So there you are. Dillis Powell. Maud.
Magdalene.
That's a nice idea. It's and I think I will give
idea.
You some of the marks for it. But
yes.
The normal derivation is Matilda.
Thank you, Jack.
No, Dennis Norton. Kit.
Kit Marlowe was Christopher.
Yes, Christopher it is. Two marks. That was fairly easy when I thought. And so to a round about verse and poetry, rhymes that we learnt or tried to learn when we were very young. I don't want the names of the authors, because most of these are anonymous or traditional rhymes, but up to three marks as a maximum, if you can go on as long as you can go on, completing these verses. Beginning with Anne Scott James, Monday's child is fair of face, Tuesday's child is full of grace, Wednesday's child is full of woe.
Woe. Thursday's child has far to go.
Yes.
Friday's child is loving and giving. Saturday's child has to work for its living. That's me. I was born on a Saturday. But the child that is born on the Sabbath day is happy and wise and good and gay.
Yes, yes. Great. Three marks absolutely spent.
She knows
well
poetry.
Now, Frank Muir. And listen carefully, Frank. One, two, buckle my shoe.
three, four... Open the door.
No.
5, 6, pick up the sticks. 7, 8, open the gate. 9, 10, dirty fat hen.
I think you had a very disturbed childhood. two and a half, I think, out of three.
What's yours, then? Come on.
I'll give it to you, yes. One, two, buckle my shoe. 3, 4, and then there are two versions of the next line, and you both got both wrong. It's either knock at the door or shut the door, which isn't open the door. 5, 6, pick up sticks. 7, 8, lay them straight. 9, 10...
So 7, 8 what?
7, 8, lay them straight. You have to with sticks. otherwise, you get a most terrible muddle in your backyard. 9, 10, a big fat hen, or it could be a good fat hen. So 2.5, I think, would be fair. All right, on to Dillis Powell. Little Polly Flinders sat among the cinders.
I really had a very underprivileged childhood.
She got bashed for getting her clothes dirty. Get that into rhyme.
Yeah.
Her mum came in and whipped her for
getting
her clothes dirty.
Yeah.
Little Polly Flinders. If I had a skipping rope, I could do it.
Give Dennis a skipping rope and try.
Yeah.
I'm shocked at this, as you don't know this.
You couldn't have a childhood at all.
No, no, no.
What happened to your
childhood? It's very underprivileged. I was working in a blacking factory with Dickens.
Frank, go back to...
A Browning would have been more suitable.
Go back to the bit that you did, which was quite right.
Because she was got a new dress and she was got it all Cindy and cinders and ash all over it and...
It doesn't scan, Frank. It's approximately what the sense is about, and I will give you one mark out of three for that. Little Polly Flinders sat among the cinders, warming her pretty little toes. Her mother came and caught her and whipped her little daughter for spoiling of her nice new clothes.
You gave her a bash because of the ash.
Dennis, you either had too many nice new clothes or none at all. I wouldn't know
none
which.
None at all, no, in that blacking factory. They never gave me any.
All right, back to Dennis Norton. Dennis, This is the farmer sowing his corn that kept the cock that crowed in the morn, that waked the priest all shaven and shorn, that married the man all tattered and torn.
Oh, there's a heck of a lot that goes on before you finally arrive at the house that Jack built.
Yes, that's it.
Including a cow with a crumpled horn.
Yes. That married the man all tattered and torn.
Yes.
And he did...
Yeah. Only with a cow with a crumpled horn. What am I doing with this alien corn? The house that Jack built.
Yes, you hardly qualify yet, yes.
Oh, he beat the maiden all forlorn.
Yes. That's right, yes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Go on, we're there.
Who milked the cow with a crumpled
Quite
horn.
Quite right. Well done, Anne.
Come on, now.
Yes, and what did the cow do?
I think the cow's gone.
All right. Thanks to yes. Anne's help.
We meet at dawn.
One and a half. You got two out of the six lines. This is the farmer sowing his corn that kept the cock that crowed in the morn, that waked the priest all shaven and shorn, that married the man all tattered and torn, that kissed the maiden all forlorn, that milked the cow with a crumpled horn, that tossed the dog, that worried the cat, that killed the rat, that ate the malt, that lay in the house that Jack built. Now we have a nice classical round of mythology, and two marks for correct answers. And Scott James, what was the Minotaur?
Oh, the Minotaur lived in the middle of the labyrinth in Crete, and yes. he was a bull-headed monster.
Yes.
Who had a tribute.
Habits?
Maids. Oh, habits. He devoured youths and maidens yes. sent from the mainland of Greece. His habits were nasty. Do you want more?
And no, that's absolutely
the bull vaulting, the people used to have to vault on his back. All in Mary Renault.
Yes, quite right, Dennis. I'm glad you mentioned that. There's a lovely book about it by Mary Renault, The King Must Die. Relating it all to bullfighting. But this was a monster, half man and half bull, the offspring of the queen, Pasiphae, and a bull, kept in the labyrinth at Crete, at Knossos, and eventually killed by Theseus with the help of Ariadne. Two marks. Frank Muir. Who was Androcles, and why is he remembered?
If I can't answer the second one, I can't answer the first one. Androcles was a slave.
Yes.
And he was in the woods, and there was this lion. And the lion had a thorn in his paw. Poor little lion had a nasty old thorn in his paw. And Androcles bravely took the thorn out of the lion's pad. And then years pass. And then something happens to Androcles which escapes my memory. It was irrelevant at the moment. And he's flung into the arena in Rome to be eaten by a lion. And a lion bounds out of a cage, released, and eats him because it's a different lion. That story has been corrupted to give it a happy ending.
Well, because you know the happy ending, in common with George Bernard Shaw, I'll give you your two marks. Dillis Powell, who was Vulcan, and who were his assistants?
Vulcan was a kind of underworld character.
Yes.
Who had a forge.
Yes, quite right.
And he was a god, and he had a bellows.
Yes. And his assistants.
His assistants.
This is rather more difficult.
This is very difficult. He was called Hephaestus in Greek.
The what?
He was called. He was called Hephaestus.
Yes, absolutely right. Yes, yes. He was the god of fire. He was also god of the working of metals, and as Dillis quite rightly says, he worked out his forge. The forge and the workshop were on Mount Etna. And his assistants were the one-eyed Cyclops, and they forged, or helped him to forge, Jove's thunderbolts. Two marks. All right, Dennis Dorden. Who was Cassandra?
She was the daughter of parents.
Priam,
that's it. Yes.
Well done.
Who were Greek, yes. Greek parents, and she...
Trojan
parents. Yes, what am I talking? Yes. Yeah. Trojan parents. King Priam of Troy.
Yes.
And then she had this rather dicey do with this god who came down and they had it better than anybody, the gods, because they could turn anybody to anything or give them any sort of reward they wanted. And he said that I will give you the gift of prophecy if... So she... Well, the point is she didn't, you see. And she had the gift of prophecy already given her, as it were. So then he got very angry about it and said, well, I'll give you the gift of prophecy, but nobody will take any notice of it.
Yes.
So she went round at all the parties sort of prophesying.
Whoa.
And she was a drag because nobody... it was always unhappy. She never prophesied, you know, good things are going to happen. It was always bad things, and nobody took any notice of her.
Absolutely right.
So I think she joined a tennis club or something.
It's a beautiful description of the Sandler story, and you get 2 marks for it, Dennis. She got the gift of prophecy, and she was fated to prophesy truly... and always to be disbelieved. She was the girl who said, don't bring that whacking great wooden horse inside the walls.
And they said, what, people inside a horse?
That was it. Well, now we come to the last round. And go back to those 2 quotations I gave the teams earlier on in the programme. So beginning with Anne Scott James. Anne, can you give me the origin of your quotation, which was, all power is a trust, and we are accountable for its exercise.
I think this was Disraeli.
Quite right. 2 marks you get, Anne. Now, Dennis Power, the origin of yours, which was, I am myself indifferent, honest.
Shakespeare.
Yes.
Hamlet.
Yes. Who's speaking?
Hamlet.
Yes. I can't fault you. That's 2 marks. It's Hamlet talking to poor Ophelia. In the speech, which begins, get thee to a nunnery, why shouldst thou be a breeder of sinners? Well, now I'm going to ask Frank and Dennis to tell me their explanations of how these quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever unlikely explanation receives the longer amount of applause from the audience here in the theatre. So back to Dennis Norden and his quotation. All power is a trust, and we are accountable for its exercise.
Well, I've just been disqualified from driving... on account of Dillis Powell. You see, we do a lot of these programs from Birmingham, and the rest of us go up by car, but Dillis always goes up by train because she has this strange sort of quirk that she can only travel with her back to the way she's going. Well, apparently there are lots of people like this, and it's puzzling, you know, and I've had lots of sort of chats with her about it. And she mean that whatever you're in, you can only travel with your back to the way you're going? And she said, yes. And I said, well, what do you do in a lift? This whole thing boiled up rather considerably a few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when we were in Birmingham, and Dillis missed the last train. Dillis came to me in a terrible state and said, what can I do? She said, I've missed the last train and I must get back to London tomorrow morning to keep fit. And I said, oh, well, I don't know how you're going to get back unless I drive you, you see. And I had this brilliant idea. This brilliant idea that eventually led to me standing in this police court while the clerk of the court read out the charges, dangerous driving, driving without due care and attention, driving without consideration, conduct unbecoming to an... You know, though. And I sat there, and up got this policeman, this motorcyclist, this motorcycle policeman, and this rather smart lady solicitor. He said, well, sir, he said that 10:20 last night I was proceeding down the M1 when I saw this gent doing 45 miles per hour. And the magistrate said, well, I think that's quite suitable on the M1. And she said he was in reverse. Now, there was a sort of sensation in court at this, and the police constable went back and sat at the table where the lady solicitor sat, and she's just sort of sat there looking triumphant and rubbing her leg against his. The policeman, the magistrate said to me, why did you do this? What led you to go down the M1 in reverse at 45 miles an hour? Is it something psychological? I mean, were you a backward child? You know? And I explained. I told him why, and I said it was to help Miss Dillis Powell, the distinguished film critic. She can only travel if she's got her back to the way she's going, you see? And this is why I did it, sir. He said, I think any one of us would have done this if it had meant that Dillis Powell would have been fit to get to her Keep Fit class. And I thought I got away with it. But up stood this legal bird. And she said, did it not occur to you, Mr. Norden, that instead of turning your car round the other way, you could have turned Miss Dillis Powell round the other way? Well, there was a big hush. And something ugly and rather hostile ran through the court. It was me. I wasn't having it. I, of course, got off the driving charge, but I got my driving license taken away for hitting a lady solicitor with a registration book. But I'm glad. I'm still glad I did it. I'm still glad that I enabled Dillis to get to her Keep Fit class, because though Disraeli may have said that all power is a trust and we are accountable for its exercise, I think Dill Powell is a trust and we are accountable for her exercise.
Right, back to Frank Muir, and if you'll remember, his quotation was, I am myself indifferent, honest.
I'm going to tell you a story. It's a story which will finish with the words, I am myself indifferent, honest. It concerns a camel driver called Myself, who has a camel which has a harness, and the camel dies, and he has to wear the harness and pull the things, and there are several different harnesses, and I'll end up with this line. Now, I believe in doing things in an orderly, regular fashion, and I will talk and tell you this story, and then I will say the line, and then I want you to applaud. Now, be quiet, please. Otherwise you'll upset the timing. Now, I will time myself on my watch, which I have in my sock. As you see, I always have my wristwatch. I always have my wristwatch in my sock. The reason I carry it in my sock rather than on my wrist, which is normal, is that the watch also tells the time, the date. Besides the time, it also gives me the date. Now, when I'm signing a check in a shop or something and can't remember the date, when I look at my watch, people snigger. And I say, I can't remember the date and look at my watch. They think I'm just being silly. But if I bend down and fiddle with my sock and just see the date, you see, nobody takes the slightest bit of attention. That's why I wear... And you notice that the watch was in my left sock. There's a reason for that, too. I never wear a right sock. You see, I always walk sideways because they talk about the roads getting cluttered up with traffic, but the pavements are just as cluttered with pedestrians. And it's because if you think about it, the one is much wider across the shoulders than one is, as it were, in depth. So if everybody walks sideways, we'd all be able to pass each other. See, quite easy. So I always walk sideways along the pavement. And, of course, you can't cross your legs in walking as one does normally. One just sort of brings one foot up to the other, then pushes the other one away and brings it up. So one doesn't need, really, to have two trouser legs. I've discovered if you have one voluminous trouser leg, it's got... Oh, I'm sorry, my time's up. So I'm afraid my story has come to an end, and I haven't been able to do bring in the line. But I'm sure you appreciate that from my point of view, it's better to finish the story in an orderly fashion in the proscribed time. than to fulfil the requirements of art. I know that it may mean that Dillis and I will lose the round, and we've lost quite a lot of these rounds. It may mean that we are removed from the programme, and I have to sell the children, and my wife has to beg, and Dillis has to go back to being an usherette at the Isolde. But these arguments don't obtain with me. I mean, arguments like that may affect Dillis, they may affect my wife, but not me. So that sort of argument, I am myself indifferent, honest.
I still hope to see Frank walking sideways in one trouser leg.
Well, that brings to an end the contest of the stories, which Dennis Norden, by your vote, wins. It also brings us to a final score in which Anne Scott-James and Dennis have done frightfully well and won by 8 marks, this time, from Dillis Powell and Frank Muir. And that also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott-James, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The programme was devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.